Welcome to the podcast, How to Run and Grow Your Solo Patent Practice with Anant Kataria and Fez Wahid of Sagacious IP. This is a one-of-its-kind podcast focused on existing and aspiring solo or small patent practitioners, interviewing successful solo or small patent practitioners and bringing to you proven, actionable insights to start, build, and grow your patent practice. Learn firsthand how to acquire, serve, and retain clients for long-term success. All this while effectively juggling the multiple roles that one has to play as a solo or small patent practitioner. If you run a solo or small patent practice, or are planning to start one, whether you're currently in a mid-size or big law firm, or coming fresh out of law school, this podcast series will help you learn from the successful ones who have faced and overcome the challenges you are dealing with. So let's get into the podcast with your hosts, Anant Kataria and Fez Wahid.
Welcome to today's episode of How to Run and Grow a Solo Patent Practice. Our guest today is Dr. Adam Diamond from Diamond Patent Law. He runs his practice from Encino, California, where he supports his customers, his clients in patents, trademarks, and other forms of IP. He earned his PhD in genetics from University of California, Davis, then his postdoc at UCLA in nephrology, and his undergraduate studies at UC Berkeley, where he double majored in molecular and cell biology and religious studies. And you'll see a flavor of his experience in the conversation that we have. And quite interestingly, he also has a very well-running podcast that he uses for his business development and marketing purposes. I'm sure we'll learn about it when he talks further. So let's take it forward with him and learn from his experiences on how to run and grow a solo patent practice. Hi, Adam. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Our pleasure. Why don't we just start with a quick introduction about Diamond Patent Law. Please tell us a bit about your practice.
Sure. I started in 2017. Before that, I was at a small patent boutique firm for about 5 years and pretty much doing patent prosecution the whole time, a little bit of litigation. Currently, I only do the prosecution part and I'll help out with litigation if people need. And before that, I graduated law school in 2008. And if people remember, that was the time of not such a great economy, a lot of people getting laid off. There weren't that many people hiring patent attorneys at the time. So I was doing a little bit of non-patent work before I got back into becoming a patent attorney. And what started me to found it is, I never initially had the goal of running my own business. A lot of people, they have this dream of starting on their own. I was always a much more conservative. I liked a more stable type of job. But we had a family friend that was a patent attorney who was thinking about retiring. And he asked me if I knew any patent attorneys that might want to take over some of his clients on a contract basis. And I said, well, maybe I would. And we started to talk. And so I ended up starting on my own and at least had a little bit of work coming from another firm, because I think that's always the hardest part of starting out and starting from zero. So at least I had a little bit of something. But unfortunately, when I started out, the two main clients that he had decided they didn't want to do that much intellectual property work anymore. So I pretty much was starting out on my own, but that wasn't so bad. I've been building up my practice. Currently, it's just me. I do everything. I'm the paralegal. I'm the billing person. I'm the patent attorney. I'm the receptionist. So I kind of enjoy all the aspects of running a practice myself. And mostly what I do, my background is in molecular biology. There aren't that many people calling patent attorneys, out of the blue for molecular biology inventions. So I'll cover pretty much everything, dog leashes to antibiotics. I cover the gamut of lots of different types of inventions. So that's kind of the basics of what I do, and I enjoy it a lot.
That's quite interesting, Adam. Actually, somebody wanting you to take over their practice and then you finding to start on your own, that's quite an interesting start to the business. But since you came along from the boutique firm to your independent practice, how different the experience has been with respect to, your work-life balance and your ability to do what you want? How different it has been?
Yes, so one of the positives is that I do work primarily from a home office. When I meet with clients, I do have an office that I can rent. But one good thing is that, I do have two kids and I'm able to take them to school and pick them up. It'd be a lot harder if I was an associate at a law firm. So I'm able to kind of make my own hours. I start picking up my kids around 2 o'clock And from then until when my wife gets home, I'm doing kid duty, and then I might start up work again around 5 or 6 o'clock if I have stuff to do. So it works out well for our family. You know, everyone has different needs. But for us, it's been good that I've had the flexibility starting my own practice and also, you know, being a caretaker to my kids.
Great. This is quite good to know. And I think this is one factor that would motivate people who are listening to this podcast as another advantage of starting out on their own from wherever they are currently. So, Adam, you know, as we got to know about your firm, we realized that, you know, generating business and promoting your practice is something that you seem to be doing quite well. And it appeared very interesting to me, the kind of initiative that you have. So we'd like you to tell more to our viewers about the overall strategy that you have for generating business.
Yeah, currently, probably most of my clients, or about half, find me through my podcast. It's called the Patenting for Inventors podcast. And I take people just from, you have an initial idea in your head and you don't know what to do. And I go all the way through an issued patent. And there are so many twists and turns that happen in there. And each episode, I try to make about 10 minutes so you don't get too bored listening to it. It could be something as simple as, how do you actually sign a patent document? And that sounds simple, but there are all these rules about what counts as a valid signature and what doesn't count as a signature. I have more complex things about how to file international applications. And even though I go through all the steps and I tell exactly, you know, what to do, it is an advertisement for myself. So my goal is, you know, I'll tell you what to do, but maybe you'll think it's too complicated, and have enough trust in me by listening to my podcast that, you know, you come to me and want me to help you out with your patents and intellectual property. And it's worked pretty well. As I said, I probably about half of my clients find out about me through my podcast. And I recently started doing some YouTube videos as well. And so it's working out well. I always have had like to do some creative aspect of my life. So when I went out on my own, do a podcast because I love listening myself. So did a podcast or a couple books that I wanted to do. So I did some books myself. So it's been a fun little project for me and just enjoyed a lot.
So could you please tell the name of the podcast again for our listeners? Because this is quite interesting. And I believe you have completed 100 plus episodes already.
Yeah, so the podcast is called the Patenting for Inventors podcast. You can find it just on any podcast platform, Apple or anything else. And yeah, you know, when I did about one a week for 2 years. So when I got to my 100th episode last month, I decided, you know, I pretty much covered all the main points. And, you know, I was kind of getting into little, you know, nitty gritty details about patent signatures that people probably don't care about so much. But I thought 100 episodes would be a milestone. So after I hit that, I figured I'd take a little bit of a break from regular weekly episodes and maybe come out with some more podcast interviews of inventors and things like that. So the podcast isn't over, just maybe take a little bit different turn for right now and doing some other things, as I mentioned, the YouTube videos about various aspects of patenting as well.
This is quite fascinating, I think, having a podcast that sees 100 episodes. You said 10 minutes, 100 episodes, maybe 1,000 minutes of recording and knowledge sharing that you have been able to achieve. What really did give you an idea of running a podcast for inventors?
Kind of a podcast junkie myself. I think I have about 35 podcasts on my phone that I listen to. And I listen to it 2 times or 3 times speed because I have so many to do. And to me, I really felt like I get a lot of information and learn how to do things from podcasts. And I think this generation, a lot of other people are doing that as well. And it's kind of I didn't see anyone else doing this type of thing for patents and figured it might be a marketing opportunity that's been overlooked by a lot of people. And figured I'd, you know, give it a shot because I enjoy it and looking for new ways to advertise myself. I wouldn't say I'm a natural advertiser or marketer or, you know, kind of business schmoozer myself. So this is something that I felt comfortable doing myself that would, you know, get me some clients.
Right. And I believe that this took a lot of your time, and, you know, time in each of the practices is ultimately money. So do you see the returns coming out of this investment? And how has this really been helpful to you?
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, I figured when I started, you know, starting a podcast doesn't really cost any money. I pay for a hosting platform. I think it's $7 a month. And I figured, you know what? I don't know if this will work, but if I get one patent application out of it, then it's worth it financially, besides just the personal enjoyment that I do. So, and I've gotten several patent applications out of it. And in my practice, I'll do some trademarks and copyrights. It's not a focus of mine because there are lots of other attorneys that do that, and patenting is much more specialized. But I do have a couple episodes on trademarks and copyrights because I know that people who are doing inventions, you know, also will have some side issues of, you know, they want to trademark the name of their product or their company name or copyright the packaging or manual. So I try to cover, you know, all of the aspects of intellectual property while focusing most on what the inventor needs to do to get the patent from the idea into their head.
Adam, it looks like that this, you know, podcast has been a great idea for you with respect to outreach. And, you know, now that we are also trying to run a podcast, we find that there is a lot of things that we had to learn. It doesn't look so complicated at times, but then there are things that you have to learn. And then the most important thing is to committing to it and, you know, managing your schedule. So how did you go about this aspect of, you know, organizing your schedule and committing yourself to doing this consistently? Any thoughts, any ideas here about, you know, that might inspire our audience here?
Yeah, so I thought of as many ideas that I could have for the entire patenting process. And at first, I just started writing them down myself and then putting them into just a Word file into outline form. And then I just, you know, kind of went on, you know, the internet, looked for other patent questions that people were having and put them all in. And then I would just basically write it myself. You know, I try not to look at what other people were saying because I didn't want to copy people's stuff. So I would just kind of write maybe about 3 pages worth in a Word file. And, you know, I am, when I do my podcast, mostly reading it because I'm always afraid if I don't read it, I'm going to mess up and have to re-record it. But I try to say it in a way where it doesn't sound like that I'm reading my stuff. And, you know, I always want my podcast to have good sound quality. And I don't have a soundproof room or a sound studio here. And the best place actually for me to record, I did some testing, was actually my bedroom closet because all of the clothes absorb stuff. So that's actually my sound studio is my closet there. And it's worked out pretty well because I know for me, whenever I listen to a podcast, if it doesn't have good sound quality, I just won't listen to it anymore. So I try to make it good sound quality, do it pretty inexpensively. I use Audacity for recording. I use a podcast provider hosting called Libsyn, $7 a month. Everything else, you know, it's pretty much taken care of. It does everything automatically. Paid someone to help out with the podcast cover art and the intros to make it sound professional. And, you know, and then it's kind of goes from there. You know, I would do it about once a week. Sometimes I would record about maybe 4 episodes at a time. Have everything written out, hit record, do a little bit of editing if I kind of messed up along the way. But other than that, it hasn't been that complicated. I did listen for a while to some, you know, how to do podcasts, but at some point, even they say it, you just have to do it. In the beginning, it might not be great. You get better as you go along. And, you know, if you have good information and good quality, then people hopefully will listen.
I think you've given a lot of operational insights to our listeners who might be thinking of using the podcast as an outreach tool. But I think, you know, really setting up a podcast requires a little amount of thought process in terms of, you know, what the topic would be, what kind of content you would really push out to your target audience, etc. If you could share a few things on that front, you know, how do you really go about? Now, looking in hindsight, you would have a lot of learnings from your own experience.
Yeah, so, you know, I would, as I mentioned, at first I would just kind of come up with my own thoughts, and then I would look at other books. There's, you know, how to, you know, patent an invention yourself, and there are various, you know, outlines, table of contents. I would kind of look at those to get ideas. Also, a lot of my clients would just ask me questions, and, you know, I'd use those to bounce off, you know, a whole episode for that. And, you know, that's pretty much how I'd go about it. You know, after 100 or so episodes, really covered the basics. There are actually a couple I thought of that I didn't cover yet. And I was like, okay, well, I'll have more than 100 coming up soon. But it hasn't been actually that difficult when you think about all the different things that could happen for a patent. There's so many twists and turns from, you know, not writing your claims right to the different parts of an application. There's so many types of rejections that you can get and objections that it's really not that hard to come up with, you know, so many episodes to cover, you know, the whole process. And, you know, as attorneys know, there's the what's called the MPEP, the Manual for Patent Examining Procedure. And it's a very thick book that's used to examine patent applications, but it's very hard to read as well. If you read this, you're not going to know how to write a patent. So I could kind of use that as a guide for looking at chapters that are in there that are just really hard to understand for the layperson, but make an episode just about using one of those chapters and make it explainable for inventors so they know what it's about.
Great. And Adam, podcast is something that you've done so well. And I believe there are sources of not just outreach, but I would say letting the information out in different ways that you've focused on. I saw those two books you have on Amazon and then the YouTube channel that you started very recently. So could you please throw some more light on these aspects and how are you using each of these media?
Sure. So for my podcast, I'm able to distribute it to a lot of different platforms as soon as it publishes. So when it publishes, it will go to Facebook, it will go to Twitter, it'll publish on YouTube as well. But because just audio, that's just my cover art there. And recently, I heard that YouTube is the second most used platform for searching things after Google. And so I decided to do some more animated videos on my channel. My channel is Diamond Patent Law. It's DIAMENT. So if you go there, you could see I started a couple animations because I always felt like when I saw things on the internet, if there was an animation involved in it, it just kept my attention a whole lot more. So I figured I'd use that for myself. So currently I have about three up there. There's one about the four different types of intellectual property. There's one about common rejections and how to overcome them. And there's a third one that I can't remember now, but kind of my goal is to put more stuff out there for people to find me. And as you mentioned, I have a couple books that I did. I was a religious studies major. And, since I'm a patent attorney, you would think there's not that much overlap. But I found a way for there to be overlap. And there are actually a whole lot of religious affiliated inventions. So I did one first called Kosher Patents. And it's all about Jewish related inventions. So there are things related to kosher slaughtering devices. There are a whole lot of inventions about keeping the Sabbath because Jewish people are prohibited from doing certain things on the Sabbath, but there are ways to get around it. And a lot of these inventions have to do with that, special kinds of light switches and things of that sort. And then I worked with a friend of mine who's Christian, and she asked me when she saw my Jewish one, she said, "Hey, would you want to do a Christian one?" And I said, "Sure, I'm not Christian, but you want to be a co-author with me." So we did that and we called it What Would Jesus Patent? We thought it was a clever name. And there are all sorts of things. Some are just kind of fun and silly. Some are more serious. There are things related to Christmas tree inventions, assemblies of Christmas trees, fire extinguisher Christmas trees. There are things related to baptismal fonts and, things related to pews, in churches that are kind of more high tech, all sorts of different things. It's just kind of a fun thing to read. Now I give them out as kind of advertising for, if I meet a potential client, I, have this book, they'll have it in their house. If they ever want to patent something, hopefully I'll come to mind because they have something in their possession that I gave them.
That's quite interesting. I really like this idea of the books that you use as, gifts that you share, and then they act as your advertising material. Yeah. It's much better than giving diaries that have just blank pages. It's pretty interesting. We would also like to know from your experience, you've won several clients in your practice as a solo practitioner. We'd like to know from your experience, which has been like an easiest customer win and also an experience where it was very difficult to get that customer. It'll be quite interesting, I believe, for us and for our listeners.
Do you mean the customers that are easiest to work with and the hardest to work with, or are getting the types of customers?
Getting the type of customers, yeah. So any example of, this particular customer was very easy?
Yeah, so I would say, I've thought about doing more advertising on Google just with AdWords, and the type of people who are finding internet attorneys on the internet, instead of going through referrals, they generally haven't started a business yet. So they're kind of in the very beginning stages. And because of that, they don't have a lot of funds. So the people generally who randomly find me on the internet, while I enjoy working with those individual inventors, sometimes it's a challenge for them because they don't realize the cost that patents take, which can be very expensive. So those are probably the easiest clients to get because, I don't need to do much work in getting those patents. I could just have an ad up or they hear my podcast. The harder clients to get generally are ones that have established businesses because, they're either working with bigger firms already, or they want, they want a bigger firm, or they have business attorneys and they refer them to patent attorneys they know. And if you're starting out as a solo practitioner, generally you don't have those kind of connections yet. So it kind of depends on the type of clients you want to work with. If you want to work with only individual inventors who maybe are starting out with something very simple and don't have a lot of funds, but you can get a lot of them and you want to build your practice by having a whole lot of small inventors, that's fine. You know, those are easier to get. But on the other hand, if you're looking for more of the big clients, in general, I would say that's harder to get as a solo practitioner because you generally don't have those connections. And oftentimes, they might want someone who can do not just patent prosecution, but litigation as well. And litigation can get expensive. And if you're a solo practitioner, sometimes it's hard to, you know, to do all of that by yourself. So you just kind of have to decide who do you want your clients to be and just be realistic on, you know, how much work you have to do to get those kind of clients.
Right.
So, Adam, what would be one of your key recommendations and advice to someone who has just started a new practice or is thinking of starting a new practice? What would you ask him to keep in mind?
I would say the most important thing is to be organized and not to recreate the wheel. You know, whenever you have a new patent file, you're going to have a lot of the same types of documents that you use, the same folders. You're going to have a patent office document folder. You have an opinions folder. So, you know, something that I try to do that I've been working on is creating templates for a lot of things. So if I have a new client, I'll copy an entire folder of stuff into that new client file. If I have a patent application, I have several templates that I'll use. So I don't need to recreate the wheel on drafting a lot of stock language, and same with office actions. So, and same with emails as well. You know, when I file a patent application for someone, I like to include a whole lot of information on the timeline going forward and everything for that aspect. And I don't need to repeat all that. So I created a Word file that has about 50 different emails that I'll commonly use, and then fill in the blanks with the application number and the client name. So just kind of getting yourself up and running and building up kind of a database, things that you're commonly going to use and that you have easy access to, it'll make your life a whole lot simpler when you're running a solo practice.
Great, Adam. Thanks a lot for your inspiring talk. We learned a lot about podcasts, ebooks on Amazon to get new business, staying organized, as well as the fun of having your own practice so that you can give much time to your family and run it as per your wish. I think this is great information for our listeners. And in case many our listeners want to reach out to you and have some questions, what's the best way for them to contact you?
Probably the easiest way is to go to my website. It's diamondpatentlaw.com. It's D-I-A-M-E-N-T, patentlaw.com. From there, there's contact page. It's my phone number. You can call me. It's 424-281-0162. And that's in the U.S. So if you need to put a one in there, that's what you should do. You know, I'm all over the internet. I'm on LinkedIn, diamondpatentlaw.com on YouTube, or a Diamond Patent Law video channel on YouTube. Anywhere you type in Diamond Patent Law, it should pop up.
Great. I'll highly recommend, you know, our listeners to go to Diamond Patent Law and browse through your stuff, and especially the podcasts, and get inspiration to start their own podcast. And thanks a lot for joining us. And we look forward to have you again and discuss some more stuff for your solo practitioners. Thanks for that.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the podcast, How to Run and Grow Your Solo Patent Practice, with your hosts Anant Kataria and Fez Wahid from Sagacious IP. If you enjoyed this episode, please do rate it and listen to more episodes in the series. For more information about supporting your practice with external resources, write to us at info@sagaciousresearch.com. Please do note that the contents of this podcast were intended for general informational purposes only. The views of the guests and hosts were their personal views and do not represent Sagacious IP. The facts of every legal matter are unique, and the content of this podcast should not be considered as offering legal advice for your specific legal situation. The preceding information may be considered attorney advertisement and does not establish an attorney-client relationship.